Most biographies of New York singer-songwriter Jesse Malin start with one little factoid. So who are we to buck the trend, right? Jesse Malin's been on the national music scene since the age of 12. Back then, it was mostly punk rock, glam, with the bands Heart Attack and Degeneration. Then there was a long stretch of solo work and even a year without any performing or recording whatsoever. Now he's back playing with a band, the St. Mark's Social. Their CD is called Love It to Life. I was twisted late last night. A young girl asked me polite. I felt like I've been here before. But the demon life is an open door. That's Burning the Bowery by Jesse Malin and the St. Mark's Social. And Mr. Malin joins us now from the CBC in Toronto. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
For a former punk rock musician, is this way too early in the morning?
I was telling my guitar player earlier, it's like you got into this because you love music. But then one of the perks, we used to say, well, we don't have to put on a suit and get up to an alarm clock at 7 in the morning. But you find yourself out on the road and sometimes you go to bed at 3 and your tour manager says, lobby call at 4.
So we just heard Burning the Bowery, and I understand that the Bowery is important not just in your musical career, but in your life.
When I was a kid, I got into music, and the place to go was CBGB's. So I started writing songs, and CBGB's offered up on Monday nights on the Bowery audition night. And if you had original songs, you couldn't play covers, you couldn't play that Twisted Sister or Def Leppard track. You had to play your own stuff, and you could come and audition. And I went with four other 12-year-olds in the back of my mother's big old car, and we auditioned for the people on the Bowery.
But the amazing thing is, you're on the Bowery, you're young, you're trying to look tough, you're punk rock. But at the same time, your grandfather used to work on the Bowery.
Yeah, my grandfather sold liquor. He would go up and down the Bowery after the war, and he would be selling wine. And he had this bright idea that he would get each bar their own label, so they'd have the name of the bar on the bottle. And it was a great thing. It did him really well for a while until somebody got hit 100 blocks away in Harlem with a bottle from a bar downtown and realized people were taking these bottles, was against the law, out of the bars. And guy got cracked in the head, and that was all over. But he had it for a while.
Now, I heard that this new album, the genesis of this album, can be tied to the late J.D. Salinger. Explain this to me.
I got this phone call to write some songs for a film on J.D. Salinger, who was alive at the time still. And, of course, I was a fan and knew his work. And I found myself rereading Catcher in the Rye and Nine Stories. And I realized how much, you know, those books, especially Catcher in the Rye, was probably the original or one of them punk rock, rebel, outsider stories. And I decided I had to do some research, and I found out that Salinger was alive and 4 hours away from New York City. So me and my buddy went up in a car, and we tried to maybe get a glimpse of him in Cornish,
New Hampshire.
Yeah,
I was going to say, if you got an interview with him, I'd love to hear about it.
We didn't get too close. I thought if I get something, it would help the songs. And the police rolled up on us and were bothering us, thinking we were trespassing. I guess they're used to people bothering the man. He was in his 90s, and we ended up in a police station, and I told them I was an artist. I was a writer doing research, and they looked me up on the thing on the internet, and they saw a video of me singing a couple songs. One was with Bruce Springsteen, so that impressed
that
them.
That helps,
and
yeah.
We were shaking in our boots. I went back to New York and wrote a few of the songs that would end up on Love It to Life, and it got me going to write about 20 others.
Well, I know two of those songs are on the album, The Archer and Lonely at Heart, right?
Yes.
Which one should I play?
I think you should play The Archer. Over the cuckoo's nest, sometimes a great notion, I've seen the best, moving round in a locomotion. My, she's so pretty, the only girl from you know, I'd read these stories about how Salinger would send these letters to girls that he had a feeling for. Maybe he's read somebody in a New York Times Magazine article, or he saw a woman on a sitcom, and he would write these letters to these women. He never went out socially to parties to mingle, but he would send these love notes. And of course, some girls getting a note from J.D. Salinger is usually probably going to be pretty impressed. And I looked at him as like little arrows. You know, he's sending out these arrows. And sometimes I write songs to get somebody's attention, and felt the arrows made the archer. She's the only one who knows that I left there long ago.
speaking with Jesse Malin, who has a new CD called Love It to Life. So are you J.D. Salinger in the song?
I think when you're writing about something, you have to be able to find a piece of yourself in that person. And, you know, whether it's some criminal or, you know, some old writer guy. So I just always look for things that have some kind of parallel that I could sing and connect to.
You know, in one of the songs on this album, you say, "All my friends are dead or in business." And I laugh because you've actually picked the business side of things, which I guess is better than the dead side of things. You own a couple of New York City music clubs.
It always seemed to be my kind of idea to take some of my publishing money and put it back into a nightclub and, you know, create some jobs for my friends, have a place where touring bands were on tour. They come to one of our spots, they could drink free, they could know that they'd be able to come in and that get the hospitality that I seek when I'm in some town and I'm like, where can I go for an after-show beer? Where can I hear a great DJ? Where can I unwind? So with the right team, it seems to be working out. We have a place called the Bowery Electric on the Bowery and a club called Niagara, which is a little corner bar. You gotta burn the bridge.
I noticed on your album there's at least a couple songs with the word burn in the title, and there's a lyrics for one of them, Burn the Bridge. It goes like this: incarcerated, broke, and alone, I've been bought and I've been sold so long.
Yeah, that's poetry.
What were you talking about there? The buying and selling of your soul?
Well, it could be on a spiritual thing, what we go through, you know. I mean, I've worked some terrible jobs. I've been on record companies that have, you know, bought me, dropped me, thrown me around. You know, I think people, as trying to survive, trying to make a living, trying to exist in the world, I think you go through a lot of stuff where you have to sometimes be somebody's slave in some existence, some way.
You know, I sometimes get the feeling that all the darkness and dismalness you write about and we hear in this album, it's a little bit of a front. There's a picture of you in the liner notes with hope and glory pinned onto your hands. Is that a little closer to your real view of life?
I think like anything, if you could speak about bad things and get to share them and sing about them, then you kind of transcend them. You turn them around. They're not so dark and evil. I don't love just fairy tale songs that are just about cars and girls. And I like stories and the characters and things that are somewhat created and based in real people and everyday life. And sometimes that's not so perfect. But having these things that are darker and having light at the end of the tunnel is just what I've always been drawn to. A lot of my songs deal with a lot of personal demons, and when I can't go to a shrink or maybe, you know, get some kind of help, I sing about these things. And saying something over a microphone in public with people, there is a connection and some way of getting out the poison, and somehow it's a celebration and it's a connection.
Well, I know you were a former punk rocker, so when I listen to your songs, I'm always waiting for that hardcore to bleed through a little bit. And sure enough, what do I hear on the song Black Boombox? But a classic guitar riff and an Iggy Pop reference in the first line. Lust for life, Thursday night, we'll all come together in your rock and roll sweater, come on. Is this nostalgia or an homage?
Probably a little of both, probably a homage. I mean, for me, those are the records we played over and over again as a kid, and especially a song like Lust for Life. If you guys don't know it out there, you should check it out. It's been used on commercials. The world's changed. But, you know, these are the songs that were our anthems, that rhythmically and what they spoke about. You know, Lust for Life or Love It to Life. It's being in the moment, living it, making the most out of it.
So, Jesse, you are now 42 years old. What would the 12-year-old punk rock Jesse Malin have thought of this album?
I think you would have liked it. You know, I mean, I think I've always liked songs. So stories, you know, I think punk and folk and the storytelling thing is very connected. You know, Woody Guthrie, I think, is very punk rock, or Bob Dylan. You take away the loud amplifier and what you have is a couple chords and a story that might be a protest song, or it might be some kind of slice of life. And I think there's a connection there with the troubadour and the squatter punk rocker.
Well, Jesse Malin, thank you so much for talking with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Speaking with us from the studios of the CBC in Toronto, Jesse Malin. His latest CD with the St. Mark's Social is Love It to Life. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Robert Smith.
You got to wear the